conclusion of the sixth chapter. So last time we discussed Arjuna's first set of questions. It's one question which is phrased in two verses. He says that this process of yoga is not practical because I can't see equally. Why I can't see equally describes in the 34th verse that the mind is too restless. Then from this verse onwards, Krishna will answer in two verses. Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Asamshayam Mahabaho.
Asamshayam Mahabaho.
Manodurnigraham Chalam.
Manodurnigraham Chalam.
Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya.
Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya.
Vairagena Cha Grihyate.
Vairagena Cha Grihyate.
So Krishna is sympathetic here to Arjuna's concern. And he says, Asamshayam Mahabaho. Yes, there is no doubt, Arjuna. The mind is very difficult to control. Mano durnigraham chalam. So he rephrases Arjuna's words. So sometimes in communication seminars, they say that when two people have to have an effective communication on a very tense issue, first, first person has spoken, then the second person should reword it. Not just reword, rephrase it, but also express the emotion so that the other person feels assured that he has understood. And after he has understood, then when he gives the answer, then that the first person can give the answer submissively. So Krishna does that over here. He says, yes, I agree with you. Typical word. Asamshaya Mahabhava. In fact, Asamshaya is a very strong word. Where does Krishna use the word Asamshaya? Antakale Chamameva. There's no samshaya. Asamshaya. So asamshaya, there's no doubt. It's a very strong form of assertion over here. There's no doubt about it. So when he says that, that means he fully agrees. Yes, the mind is a challenge. In fact, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, the essence of yoga is to control the mind. And he further says, durnigraham chalam. Tasyaham nigraham manye vayo rivasudushkaram. So Arjuna used the word, same word, nigraha. He says, it is as difficult for me to control as it is to control the raging wind, durnigraha. Vayo rivasudushkaram. So we know that when there are big, big hurricanes, even the best government can't do much about it, with all its military and all other forces. So what to speak of controlling the wind? And now there are subtle weapons which can induce storms. There are not subtle weapons in modern science, but in the Mahabharata, if a weapon is used to invoke storms, then another weapon can be used to invoke a mountain. So, the Vayavyastra and the Parvatyastra. So then when the mountain is invoked, when a storm collides with the mountain, what happens? The wind just gets stopped. It can't go any further. It just gets stopped over there. So that way, the wind weapons are also known in Vedic times. But still, creating a mountain is no easy task. And so controlling the mind in that sense is like controlling the raging wind. It is extremely difficult. Vayor iva sudushkaram. So dushkaram itself doesn't mean impossible, but it is extremely difficult. Karam is to do, dushkaram is very difficult to do. So Krishna uses a similar prefix over it, durnigraham. It is very difficult to control. So in the first two lines, he sympathizes with Arjuna and he restates what Arjuna has to do. The next two lines, he brings back his original point. Yes, it is possible, Arjuna. Abhyasena tu Kaunteya Vairagena Chiviriyate. Krishna does the two things. If you do, Arjuna, you will be able to control the mind. Abhyasa and Vairagya. Practice and detachment. So, interestingly here, Srila Prabhupada often quotes this section in his books to say how the process of Ashtanga Yoga is impractical for Kaliyuga. And that is rejected even by Arjuna. So, some yogis or some yogi teachers, they protest this rendition of Srila Prabhupada by saying that actually Arjuna doesn't reject it. Arjuna says it's difficult, and Krishna actually reiterates it. Krishna does not agree with Arjuna's rejection. So therefore Srila Prabhupada is not faithfully representing the Bhagavad Gita when he says that only Arjuna rejects, but Krishna reiterates. And therefore the Bhagavad Gita never rejects the path of yoga. Now that is true. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't immediately reject the path of yoga. He says, if you see what he is saying over here, he is neither explicitly recommending the path of yoga. What he is saying is, there are two questions of Arjuna. He says, I feel the process is impractical. And the second is, 33rd verse said the process is impractical. 34th verse said that the mind is uncontrollable. Now Krishna agrees with the second, not the first. That means Krishna addresses the second question. What is it? The mind is uncontrollable. Yes, it is very difficult to control, but it is possible to control. And Krishna gives us two broad principles, Abhyasa and Vairagya. Now what these refer to is not at all clear. Abhyasa and Vairagya. Abhyasa means practice and Vairagya means detachment. So this verse in and of itself is not an endorsement of the Kusuma Ashtanga Yoga. Because Abhyasa and Vairagya will be required even in Bhakti Yoga. I have to practice remembrance of Krishna and then I have to become detached from everything else. So a yogi also, Abhyasa, he has to practice to turn the mind inwards, to fix it, first fix the eyes on the Bhruva, Madhya, Pranama, Vesha, Samya. And then he has to practice to sit erect, he has to practice to turn his vision inwards. And then he also has to be detached from worldly things, he has to take Pratyahara and go to the forest. So Abhyasa and Vairagya are two broad principles. So here, Krishna does not endorse any particular process, but he endorses the broad principle that mind can be controlled by these two principles. He gives the broad statement that the mind can be controlled by these two principles. And in fact, the next verse, before we discuss this verse further, let's recite the next verse, which is even more indicative that Krishna has something up his sleeve, which he is not releasing right now. Asayatatmana yogo
Asayatatmana yogo
Dushprapiti mematihi
Dushprapiti mematihi
Vashyatmana tu yatata
Vashyatmana tu yatata
Shakyo vaptum upayataha
Shakyo vaptum upayataha
Asayatatmana yogo. Asayatatmana means sanyam is control. Atmana here is mind. Without controlling the mind, yoga dushprapa. To attain yoga is very difficult. Now, yoga means success, it's connection with the spiritual realm. It is very difficult to attain Arjuna. But vashyatmana tuyatata. But if one controls the mind, vashyatmana tuyatata. By controlling the mind, if one endeavors yatata, shakyo vaptu, it is possible to obtain upayataha. Upayataha is the right process, the right means. If you have take the right upaya, then it is possible. Now what is the right upaya is not told by Krishna over here. It's not told by Krishna over here. So I'll just write down this flow because this is a significant point to understand the overall development of the thought of the Bhagavad Gita. Feasibility, doubts about Ashtanga Yoga's feasibility. So let us see what exactly is happening over here in these verses. So 6.34. Arjuna says process is impractical. 6.35. 37 is the next question. 33, 34, then 35, 36. these two other questions. And then he says, mind is uncontrollable. Now, in the first also, he says something like this, but the emphasis is more in the second. I don't think the question is impractical. Now, what is Arjuna, what is Krishna's answer? 6.35, he says that mind is controllable by practice and detachment. And then 6.36 he will say that by right process, mind control and yoga can be attained. Here, what does yoga refer to? Here yoga refers to what he has told in 6.22. You remember in the second chapter, we discussed several definitions of yoga. Samatvam yoga ucchate, yoga karmasu kaushalam. We discussed three definitions of yoga in the second chapter. So, in the sixth chapter, Krishna has given another definition of yoga. In 6.22, he is telling, tam vidya dukkha sanyogam viyogam yoga sangitam. O Arjuna, know that which is separation from all misery, that actually is yoga. Tam vidya dukkha sanyogam viyogam yoga sangitam. So yoga sangitam, this is defined as yoga, this is called as yoga. What is yoga? Tam vidya, know that which is dukkha sanyoga viyoga, separation from all contact with misery. That means freedom from misery. So here Krishna has defined yoga as freedom from all misery. So when we are disconnected from the material world and reconnected with Krishna, then we become free from all misery. In the Bhakti Samhita Sundari, one of the characters of pure devotional services, Klesha Agni Shubhada. Klesha Agni, all miseries go away. That is only the first characteristic of Bhakti called Bhakti Ram Sindhu. So that Krishna is defining here as yoga, freedom from misery. So Krishna is telling here in this verse that by right process, what will happen? Vashyat manatu yatata shakyo vaptu upayata. Shakya. By the right process, you can attain mind control, and by mind control, you can attain yoga. Yoga means 46.1, freedom from misery. So, make another slide to make things clear. So, Krishna neither in 6 point in his answer in 6.35-36, Krishna doesn't endorse means what? Support, recommend. Doesn't endorse Dhyan Yoga, but endorses the broad principles that underlie all yogic processes. What are the broad principles? Abhyasa, Vairagya and Manasanyatatma, Atmasanyam, controlling of the mind. So, what does Krishna do here? Yes, it's difficult to control the mind, but control the mind with practice and detachment. So, he doesn't recommend any particular process. So, Krishna is neither recommending nor rejecting the path of Ashtanga Yoga. He is just outlining the broad principles. And actually, what was Krishna's objection? Why Arjuna's objection? Vayor iva sudushkaram. It's dushkaram. So how this chapter will flow is very important to understand over here. Now Krishna is, before he can talk anything further over here, Arjuna will ask another question. And that question Krishna will answer from here till say 45. And 46, 47 Krishna will tell about how the yogi is better than all other transcendentalists. And then among the yogis, the yogi who has attained samadhi, the bhakti yogi is the best. Then, from the 7th chapter, 1st verse onwards, Krishna will start addressing Arjuna's concern. Arjuna, I said, controlling the mind is very difficult. So Krishna will tell that, now I will tell you another way to make your mind attached. The perfect yogi is one who has attached his mind to me. 7.1 starts with, Mai asakta manaha partha yogam yunyamadasha. I will tell you now how you can make your mind attached to me. And then Krishna will start outlining the principle of bhakti yoga. And in the 8th chapter, Krishna offers an exquisite comparison of Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. And when he offers the comparison of Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, that time is the only time in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna uses the word sulabha to describe a spiritual path. So, 8.14 is, Asyaham sulabha partha nitya yuktasya yoginaha ananya chetaha sattam yomam smarati nityasha. One who constantly remembers me and serves me, for him I am easily attained. So 8.14 sulabha is the answer to Arjuna's question in 6.34, that is Dushkara. So Arjuna said, basically, there is a flow of thought in the Bhagavad Gita. And as far as the flow of thought goes, Krishna doesn't here explicitly reject the path of Ashtanga Yoga. But he addresses Arjuna's concern that this is difficult. Okay, I'll tell you another process. And after describing the process, then there is an explicit comparison between Ashtanga Yoga and Dhyana Yoga. And Ashtanga Yoga and Hatha Yoga. And there he clearly says, this is easy. This is easy to attain. And of course, we have the concluding declaration of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. That is, Sarvadharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. So that means he's telling, now Sharana is directly Bhakti. Krishna is saying, Mam Ekam, only me. So there, actually Krishna rejects other processes and yes, practice devotional service and too. So what Srila Prabhupada is doing is, Srila Prabhupada is certainly faithfully representing Krishna's teachings, but Srila Prabhupada is giving us the conclusion of his teachings everywhere, as we have discussed earlier. So Srila Prabhupada, when Prabhupada says Arjuna rejected this path, yes, it's true, Arjuna said it's difficult, and Krishna did not insist you practice this. Krishna went on this flow and then offered Arjuna an alternate, and then he said, yes, you said that was difficult. He does not mention that directly over there, but this he said is difficult, this is easy. I'll compare that and this, and I'll show this is easy. And that's why finally at the end he says, yes, this is the best. You stuck to the Sarvadharmam Vrittimam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. So there is its own thought flow in the Bhagavad Gita going on. And when we understand this, then we understand that Srila Prabhupada has made complex subjects very easily accessible for us. But in bringing about easiness from complexity, he has not distorted the Bhagavad Gita. He has only made the conclusion accessible everywhere. So, some people feel that, okay, different people give commentaries on Bhagavad Gita from different directions. So, because Bhaktivedanta Swami was a Bhakta, so he gave from Bhakti side. No, it is not like that. Yes, certainly Srila Prabhupada is a Bhakta, but Bhagavad Gita itself is talking about Bhakti. So, it is not that Srila Prabhupada's commentary is biased from the Bhakti perspective. Actually, the Bhagavad Gita itself is endorsing Bhakti as the best way. But it is doing it in its own flow gradually. And Srila Prabhupada is giving us consistently throughout. You want to turn on the AC? There is a cramp here. You can open the windows also if you want. Whatever. It's See, if the windows work, that's fine. Otherwise, we get around this. So, let's come back to the flow of the Gita now. Is this question, is this point clear? The flow and the development of the Gita? How it is happening? So, let's look at these two verses now. Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha guhyate. So, Prabhupada will explain abhyas as chanting of the holy names. And vairagya means everything that is unfavorable on the devotional path should give. So, vairagya, abhyas and vairagya essentially are similar to the two principles of Sharanagati taught by Rupa Goswami, Anukulyasya Sankalpa, Pratikulyasya Varjanam. So, Pratikulyasya Varjanam is Vairagya. And Abhyasa is practice, consistent study practice. That is Anukulyasya Sankalpa, yes. Trying to fix the mind on Krishna is favorable. So, let me keep trying to do it. So, in that sense, Rupa Goswami is explicating and making more clear what is implicit in the Bhagavad Gita. And his Bhakti Samasundar. Now here, Dushparapa iti me matihi. This is my opinion also. You said Dushkaram, I also say Dushparapa. It's not possible. It's very difficult. Asanyata atmana. So Krishna is telling over here, without mind control, success in yoga is not possible. It's very difficult. So, the Bhagavad Gita is not wishy-washy about the necessity for mind control. And as devotees, in our process of sadhana, if we are to practice it regularly, it forces us to control our mind. Sometimes some people ask, you just chant this Hare Krishna Mahamantra 16 rounds, what is the use? I see that you are just looking here and there, some of you are sleeping, some people are just waiting when the rounds get over. Generally, I don't see one person who is a yogi who had come to our temple. You know, I don't see anybody absorbed in chanting. You know, either people are distracted or people are struggling to be attentive. But nobody is absorbed in chanting. So, he says, on the other hand, I see people going for yoga, and they close their eyes and they are completely absorbed. Now, whether they are in samadhi or sapna is a different issue. But they seem to be absorbed. So, actually, what is the actual fact? The point is, the quantity itself. So, they say, why do you make this regulation of chanting 16 rounds, 2 hours every day? Actually, the important thing is to fix the mind. So, yes, it is true. But actually, the quantity forces the quality. How does that work? See, the quantity, how does it force the quality? Because if every day we are going to chant 2 hours, then over a period of time we'll start. Even if the mind is resisting and going here and there, we'll start thinking, every day I'm spending 2 hours, let me put some effort also in it so that I get some returns from the time. And gradually, if we had not the regulation of chanting 16 rounds, then we would never have made much effort to control the mind. So, certainly the 2 hours chanting mandatory can be distracted. And for many of us, it is distracted. But still, because it is mandatory, it forces us to try at least to concentrate. And certainly, even if we are not very attentive, the very act of verbally uttering the holy name is purifying. And gradually, that contact with Krishna through the utterance of his holy name will, as it purifies the mind, will gradually de-energize the mind from the material point of view. And as the mind becomes materially de-energized, it will become more focused. So the quantity also, to some extent, forces quality. Of course, when will the quantity forces quality? When there is sincerity. So if there is no desire to control the mind, then it's not possible. Then the quantity will just be hypocrisy. I'm chanting 16 rounds, I'm chanting 32 rounds, I'm chanting 64 rounds, whatever. So what we are discussing here is quantity and quality. So, what does the quantity do? Quantity forces quality. when there is sincerity. So how does it work? Because as it is, I think I'm going to spend time over here. So let me use this time productively. And as it, I'm not only spending time, I'm going to spend time every day throughout my life. I have taken a vow for this. So I'm going to spend the time, then let me use it properly. So therefore, actually the quantity is important. Although it is not all important, it is not unimportant also. The quantity is important. And the quantity will gradually force us to bring about the quality. And in general, what will happen as we keep chanting the by practice, by abhyas? So actually, why is this connected? Commitment to quantity is itself an application of abhyas and vairagya, what Krishna is saying over here. Abhyas and vairagya. Because even the quantity chanting, I am doing some abhyas, I am doing some practice, uttering the Mahamantra again and again. And the mind says, stop this, go do that, think of that, speak that. But no, vairagya. No, I will chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So this itself is an application of abhyas and vairagya, what Krishna is saying over here. And over a period of time, by this commitment to quantity, what will happen is the mind will become purified and materially de-energized. De-energized means that the material mind has so much lust, so much greed, so much anger, and so it just goes off at one thought. So when it becomes de-energized, the frequency and the duration of the distractions will decrease. Frequency and duration. That means sometimes we sit down to chant Hare Krishna and then something happens and then we find, oh, did I really chant? Where the mind went, how the mouth was uttering, and just when the counterweight was going down, just find, oh, it's darshan time. What happened? They really chant. The distraction is so much that sometimes you don't even realize what is happening. So, but over a period of time, when the distraction happens, we catch time. Where is the mind going? Bring it back. Where is the mind going? Bring it back. Sometimes some devotees ask, how can we understand that I'm not different, I'm different from the body, but how do I understand I'm different from the mind? That is by trying to control the mind. If we try to control the mind and the mind resists, say, I want to do this, no. Mind doesn't want to do that. Then I understand, actually there is someone, there is my will and there is something else also going on over here. And that I have to control. So as the frequency and duration of the distractions decrease, naturally our connection to Krishna and the empowerment therefore will increase. And then this is how slowly but surely the mind will become focused around Krishna. So how it is right now when we are chanting, Krishna is here, our mind keeps wandering all around. But even if it is wandering around Krishna. In the sense that because the holy name is there, so what happens is, we are still chanting the holy name. So even if the mind is wandering, still it is wandering around Krishna. See, something connected with Krishna, even if it goes off, what happens? Suddenly Hare Krishna, okay, it comes back, again it goes off. It's wandering around Krishna. And as we keep chanting, the circle of wandering will become smaller and smaller and smaller. Till it will become focused on Krishna. Savai manah Krishna padaravindayo. Eventually the mind will become fixed on Krishna. So during chanting our mind wanders, but it wanders around Krishna. And gradually the orbit of wandering decreases. That's why it's a time-tested process. The mind wanders, but around Krishna. So actually what is happening is when we are chanting, our mind is doing pradakshina of Krishna. So, which is good. So even if the mind is looking here and there, at least it's doing pradakshina, isn't it? And slowly, the orbit of wandering decreases till the mind becomes fixed on Krishna. So it's a time-honored, well-thought process. And all that we need to do is keep practicing it. So, I won't go too much into the details of chanting over here. That itself is a whole seminar. let's focus on the what is happening. Okay. So now, at this point, Krishna says that, yes, by the right process it is possible. Arjuna still has another apprehension. His first apprehension is, I don't think this process is practical. But Krishna says, no, it is possible. Then his second apprehension he has is, if it is practical, what if I am not able to succeed in it? So I am not able to succeed in it means, I die before I attain success, or I am unable to persevere in the process till it makes me successful, and I abandon the process because of difficulty. What will happen in that process? So that is the question that Krishna is asked by Arjuna. Arjuna vacha.
Arjuna vacha.
Ayatihi shraddhayo peto.
Ayatihi shraddhayo peto.
Yogachalita manasaha.
Yogachalita manasaha.
Arapyoga samsiddhim.
Arapyoga samsiddhim.
Kangatim Krishna gacchati.
Kangatim Krishna gacchati.
Kamgati. What will be his gati? Whose gati? One who is chalita manasaha. So, chalita. So the word was chanchala. So chalita. Chanchala means it goes here and there. Chalita means it just goes away. Chalita manasa. From yoga, the mind becomes chalita. It goes away. Ayatihi shraddhayopeto. So yatihi is the renunciation. Yati raj is it. Ayatihi means one who is not successful in renunciation. Ayati shraddhayopeto. So here the important point is he shraddhaya. He has faith. He has faith. Okay, if I follow this process, I'll be successful. But somehow, he's not able to continue the process. Yoga chalita manasa. So, aprapya. Therefore, so Arjuna Krishna had used the dushprapti naimati. It is difficult to attain. So, he says, he doesn't attain. Aprapya yoga samsiddhim. So, Krishna would use the same word yoga samsiddhim while answering Arjuna's question. What will be his gati? So, these are the few, okay, this is one of the few verses where Krishna is addressed as Krishna by Arjuna. You know, the word Madhava comes, the way Achyuta comes. So, Krishna. Actually, this word is not very frequently used in the Bhagavad Gita. In general, the Mahabharata uses the word Keshava to refer to Arjuna. So, to Krishna, sorry. So, now, we'll discuss these verses and then we'll come to the... we'll recite the verses, then we'll discuss the discussion. Kachinno bhaya vibhrashtas.
Kachinno bhaya vibhrashtas.
Chinna brahmiva nashyati.
Chinna brahmiva nashyati.
Apratishto mahabaho.
Apratishto mahabaho.
Vimudho brahmanapati.
Vimudho brahmanapati.
So, brahmanapati. Pati is one who is going on a path. So, the word patha in Sanskrit and the word path in English are not only similar in terms of meaning, but they are almost identical in terms of sound also. Patha is path. You write it also, it's same transliteration. So, pathi, one who is with the path. So, brahmana pathi, it is not brahmana, not the person brahmana, it is brahmana. So, on the path of spirituality, on the path to brahman, person becomes vimudho, he becomes deluded. So, when he becomes deluded, what will happen to him? Krishna is telling, Krishna is being addressed to Arjuna. No, ubhaya vibhrashtas. Ubhaya means two, second. So, or both. So, ubhaya vibhrashtas, he becomes vibhrashta from both parts. Chinna abhram iva nashyati. So, abhrama here refers to a chinna abhrama. Chinna is separated, brahma is a cloud. So, nashyati, he is lost. So here, Krishna is being asked by Arjuna that there is a path of gradual elevation, there is a path of rapid elevation. There is the pravritti mark and there is the nivritti mark. So, by the pravritti mark, one will go to swarga. By the nivritti mark, one will go to moksha. But when one takes up the nivritti mark, one gives up the pravritti mark. One gives up the pravritti mark. And generally speaking, giving up the pravritti mark means giving up the duties which one is supposed to do, and giving up the duties is sinful. So, because that person is not doing the duties of pravritti marga, he will not get swarga. Because only when the duties of pravritti marga are done properly, one gets swarga. On the other hand, because he has not done nivritti marga successfully, so he will not get moksha. So therefore, he will be lost both ways. You will either get Svarga, nor get Moksha. So Vimukha, the Ka Apratishto, he will, what will he get, Arjuna? He will not have any support, he will not have any destination. And then to emphasize his anxiety, Arjuna will ask one more verse, which is more expression of anxiety than the further question. Etanme samshayam Krishna.
Etanme samshayam Krishna.
Chetumarhasya sheshatah.
Chetumarhasya sheshatah.
Vadanyah samshayasyasya.
Vadanyah samshayasyasya.
Chetanaya upapadyate.
Chetanaya upapadyate.
So again the word Krishna comes. As I said, why the word Krishna doesn't come too many times in the Mahabharata? Because Krishna is a very intimate form of address. Keshava is a more formal name, although they are all primary names. So here, because of the affection and the anxiety, the emotion that is there, Arjuna uses the word Krishna twice over here. Etan me samshayam, very simple. This is my anxiety, this is my doubt. Chetto, you deserve to, please, chetto, destroy. Chetto marhasya asheshava. Destroy it completely. And I don't think anybody apart from you can destroy it, because you know everything completely. So here, is emphasizing, I know that you alone can solve this problem. Nobody else can solve this problem. So when the disciple expresses confidence in the spiritual master, then because the spiritual master also opens his heart and reveals the treasures there. So if somebody thinks, okay, I will just find out what answer you give. Sometimes what happens is, some devotees want to do a particular thing. And what happens is, they already decided, I want to do this thing. But they just want somebody to certify that. So they will go to one authority and say, somebody says, somebody wants to decide whether I should become a Brahmacharya Grahastha. Person decided, I want to become a Grahastha. So they will go to some senior devotee and tell, okay, see, this is my situation, this is my situation, what should I do? And if that devotee says, actually, you can continue as Brahmacharya. He says, no, no, I'll go to some other devotee. And ask that devotee. And go on asking, till somebody gives the answer that we want to give. And then he says, yes, I got sanction from this devotee, like that. So, actually speaking, if you have decided to do something, then be honest about it and seek guidance about how to go about it. But if we have really want to decide something, then we need to take the guidance as for what else is given to us. See, there are both examples in scripture. Dhruva Maharaj had decided that I want the kingdom. So when Narada Muni told him, why do you bother about this? Narada Muni gave two reasons. First reason, he said, actually you're a child. And in childhood, you know, people don't take insults so seriously. You know, just like sometimes when children are playing and the two children have a quarrel, they say, isn't it? I'll never talk with you, okay? But that never doesn't last for more than a few days. So he says, you're just a child. Why are you taking this so seriously? Children don't take it seriously. And then Narada Muni anticipates our objection. He says that, if you think you are not a child, if you think you are grown up, if you think you are mature and intelligent, then you should understand that actually worldly things are temporary. You are the Atma, and the Atma is not insulted by any worldly insults. So therefore, if you are mature, then neglect that insult and go back to the kingdom. So both ways he says, go back. So there, Guru says very honestly, he says, what you are saying is true, but it is not suitable for you. Because according to my Kshatriya nature, I cannot tolerate insult. And I want a kingdom greater than my father. So, it's not wrong if we are convinced that this is what I want to do. That's fine. But then be honest and then seek guidance. But going around and trying to find somebody who will ratify what we want to do, that is not a very good idea. So, when we consult devotees also, it's best to place our cards right on the front. Okay, this is what my concerns are. This is what I feel I should do. So that here what Arjuna is expressing is confidence. You know, whatever you tell me, I will do that. Whatever you tell me, I will do that. And we have the example of this also in the scriptures. When a person has decided to do one particular thing, but at that time somebody else gives some senior person gives him an advice, he says, no, I will not do it. So the example of that is, there are several examples. One is Priyavrata. When Brahmaji comes and tells him, please go back and do it, he immediately agrees to it. He doesn't insist on it. So, there are examples of Prithu Maharaj. Yes. So, Prithu Maharaj, when he is told, don't do the sacrifice, fine, he agrees to it. On the other hand, when Brahmaji tells the Kumaras to beget children, he says, no. But they are open about it. So it's not necessary. Sometimes we may feel very strongly that this is what I want to do. This is what I feel is best for me. So at that time, rather than asking for instruction, receiving instructions, you know, we are still, okay, this is what I feel I should do. Please tell me how I can go about doing this in the most graceful way. That is also fine. So if we are undecided, then consult to make a decision. But if you have already decided, then don't try to find a rectification for the decision. Just be honest, okay, this is what I want to do. Please guide me as to how I can go ahead doing this. That may not be the highest level of surrender, but still, that is also within the ambit of guidance. So here Krishna is being told by Arjuna that I feel that nobody apart from you can solve this problem. So when Arjuna expresses such faith in Krishna, naturally Krishna responds by opening his heart. So Krishna offers what is one of the most reassuring verses in the Bhagavad Gita.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha
Arthanaimehanamutra Vinashastasya Vidyate
Nahi Kalyana Krit Kaschit
Durgatim Tata Gacchati. So Partha Naivehanamutra. Iha and Amutra. Iha means in this world, Amutra is the next world. Durgatim Tata Gacchati. The conclusion is that there is no Durgati. There is never any Durgati. Tata is a very affectionate word.
This is
it's an intimate form of address, which is the only time that this comes in the Bhagavad Gita, practically speaking. You'll never be inauspicious. So, fourth line says, Durgati will not be. So, there is the answer to the question. Kam Gatim Krishna Gacchati. So, Durgati na Gacchati. Very clear. And then also it says, Vinashastasyam. There will never be any Vinasha. No Vinashastasyam. There will be no destruction and there will be no bad destination. For who? Nahi Kalyanakrit Kaschidit. One who is Kalyanakrit. One who is engaged in auspicious work. Now, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains in the section that all those who are seeking transcendence are Kalyanakrit. So it's interesting, Prabhupada says Karmakandis, Jnanis, and Bhaktas, all three are Kalyanakrit. So the followers of scripture and religion who are enjoying material prosperity, so even they are Kalyanakrit. Why? Because they are in the house of scriptures. They are on the gradual path. It may take Bahunam, Janmanamante, but they are on that path. They are on the path of gradual elevation. Kalyana Krit Kaschit. Durgatim Tata Gacchati. Of course, as we look forward, it will become very clear that what Krishna is emphasizing on, as per Arjuna's question, is that one who has given up the pravritti marga yukti. So he says that one has given up this duty and taken up that duty. What about him? But anybody within the house of the scriptures is an auspicious path. Of course, it is not the most auspicious path. And if somebody gets stuck over there, then that can become inauspicious also. If somebody gets stuck at the level of animal sacrifices talked about in the scriptures, as had happened to Prachini Balakshya, then Aravani came and chastised him. If somebody gets stuck at the path of impersonal realization, then that person has to be transformed. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did with Sarvam Bhattacharya. So, if one is moving forward in the cycle within the house of Dharma, house of scriptures, then that path is auspicious. But if it gets attached and stuck, then that may not be so auspicious. But anyway, the point underlying which Prabhupada is emphasizing there, as soon as one starts seeking for spirituality, that is an auspicious path. That is an auspicious path. So, let's move forward. Now, sometimes when people ask questions, you know, there is a philosophical doubt and there is an emotional worry over there. The philosophical question and there is an emotional worry. So, often people's emotions have to be pacified before their questions can be answered. Because when a person is too emotionally worried, at that time, the answer cannot touch the heart. The person doesn't have the calmness to think about it. So first Krishna offers a very reassuring verse that actually there will be no destruction, there will be no bad destination. Oh, Arjuna, you are dear to me, Tata. after giving this reassurance, then Krishna will spell out the terms of how there will be no bad decision. Just like it is said, if a patient goes to a doctor, if the doctor's conduct is pleasant, it is gentle, it is reassuring, then that itself calms down the patient. And he said, you know, then in medicine there is something called as placebo effect. Placebo effect means that you are not given medicinal pills, just some simple pills are given, sugar pills, non-medicinal pills are given, and the doctor is told that actually I have given you medicines. And what happens? Many times the patient gets cured. So how that happens is that when the patient feels reassured, then the innate healing mechanism within the body gets cured. So that's how the patient gets cured actually. So one famous doctor, he said that a medical practitioner who is not a placebo, who does not have a placebo effect on his patients, should become a medical researcher and not a medical practitioner. That means if a patient, a doctor is agitated, then the patient will become more agitated. The doctor has to be calm. The doctor is calm, and doctor has a calming effect on the patient. So of course, from the spiritual point of view, the spiritual master is the doctor, and the patient is like the, and the seeker like the patient. The seeker will be disturbed, so at that time, calm him down. Yes, we reassure, Krishna reassures, yes. Actually, there will be no bad decision. So after that, yes, everything will be alright, things will be cured. And then the doctor will tell, what is the diagnosis? Okay, this is the disease, and this is how if you take the medicine, things will get alright. So first Krishna reassures, then he enlightens. So actually, I don't think I discussed this in this. No, preaching has two parts. That we had discussed this about preaching having two parts, encouragement and enlightenment. No. Okay. I discussed this in my Sunday feast over here, the Bhagavad-gita. Right? If only encouragement without enlightenment. It's just pep talk. You know what is pep talk? Come on, theek ho jayega. See, a doctor says theek ho jayega, and just another friend says theek ho jayega. There's a big difference between that. Because a friend, when a person is sick, a friend doesn't have any capacity to materialize those words. So if there is just encouragement without any enlightenment, then it is just pep talk. It is not very valuable. If only enlightenment without encouragement. Too forbidding. Forbidding means too difficult, too impractical. So, anybody who takes sannyas and gives up sannyas, you know, he is like eating his own vomit. Come on, become a sannyasi. No, we want to become like that. So, it is true, if somebody renounces the world, then to come back to the world is bad. But actually, there is not just enlightenment, encouragement has to be there. So, if there is, when there is enlightenment and encouragement, then there is true empowerment. Then the person becomes empowered. So, Krishna is offering an example over here of both encouragement and enlightenment. So first you have encouraged that yes, things will be alright. And you will see this Krishna doing this in the end also of the Bhagavad-gita. He says, Arjuna, you are very dear to me. For your sake I will speak to you the highest truth. So he reassures him about his love, about his concern. And then he tells the highest truth. So Radhanath Maharaj often says that the biggest task of a preacher is to convince the audience that he is their well-wisher. Once we convince the people that we are their well-wishers, the people will hear what we want to say. So that actually comes by the emotional connection, that comes by the encouragement, that comes by the sympathy. So that's why encouragement is very important. And you know, when Srila Prabhupada went to America at that time, although his English pronunciation was practically incomprehensible for many people, but just his conduct, by which he showed so much concern to everyone, people feel even if we don't understand what he is saying, even if we can't practice what he is saying, still we are convinced that he is our well-wisher. That's how actually Prabhupada touched and transformed the hearts of people. So let's see what Krishna tells now. As for the enlightenment part. Prapti punya kritam lokan.
Prapti punya kritam lokan.
Ushitva shashvati samaha.
Ushitva shashvati samaha.
Shuchinam shrimatam yehe.
Shuchinam shrimatam yehe.
Yoga brashto vijayate.
Yoga brashto vijayate.
So yoga brashta. So one who is brashta, one who is deviated. Brashta is related to the word brashtachar, corrupt. So one is corrupted on the path of yoga, one is distracted from the path of yoga. So abhijayate, he is born. Where is he born? Prapya punya kutam lokam. So Arjuna had thought that actually I will not get the punya kutam lokam. Because I have not done punya, I have given up punya to try to serve you, pursue moksha. He said no. So Arjuna's doubt was that I will neither get swarga nor get moksha. Krishna will answer that you will get both swarga and moksha. That is a beautiful answer that Krishna gives. First he says, you get swarga. Prapti punya kutam lokan. Ushitva shashvati samaha. For a long time such a person will stay over there. For how long? You know, for the material enjoyment too. Desires are there. As much enjoyment as a person wants, abandoned enjoyment one will get. See, generally speaking, material enjoyment in and of itself does not lead to realization. Material enjoyment in and of itself does not lead to realization. But when material enjoyment is done within the precincts of dharma, then gradually it leads to realization. So, that means just by the process of going to swarga and coming back, going to swarga and coming back, over a period of time, one will get realization. Okay, this is futile. There is no enjoyment in wealth, there is no enjoyment in sense enjoyment, sense gratification. And gradually one will become detached. And the greater the dharma that one is practicing, the faster will be realization. So by karma kanda also one will get realization, but gradually. If one is doing bhakti in grihastha ashram, also one will get the realization, but a little much faster. On the other hand, when one is not practicing dharma, one will never get the realization. So Ravana, he was ravishing beautiful women from all over the world, all over the universe in fact. But still, he never got satiated. Hiranyakashipu never got satiated. Their desires only got aggravated. But on the other hand, we have a scripture example of Pururava and Iyati. Now, both of them enjoy. But in their enjoyment, they never left the precincts of dharma. They never crossed the borders of dharma. And that's why what happened? Both of them got realization. So this is a significant point. Does enjoyment lead to realization? Gradually, if done within the precincts of dharma. Precincts means the limits, the boundary, the premises, let me say. So who are the two examples for this?
Pururava
and Yayati. And never or rarely if done without dharma. Ravana and Hiranyakashipu. So therefore, what Krishna is talking about over here is, yes, the person may go to heaven, but he will get satiated. And then he will come back. And where will he be born over here? Shuchinam shrimatam yehe. In the house of a of either a wealthy person or a Brahminical person. Krishna Prabhupada explains that if a person is wealthy, then there doesn't have much struggle for existence. So, he can focus on spirituality easily. And if a person is intelligent, one can see that actually this material existence, even after the struggle, there is not much pleasure. So, Shuchi and Shrimat both offer advantages in different ways. Shuchi, see, the main distraction in material life is the struggle for existence. Is minimized for transcendentalist. So how is it minimized? If your person is Shuchi, then if a person is born in a Brahminical clean family, one sees that it is unnecessary. I don't have to get entangled in this. And if one is born in a Srimad family, it is mostly inapplicable. The person doesn't have to struggle for the basic necessities of life. So, the struggle increases in proportion to our desires for material enjoyment. How is that? Radha Maharaj nowadays is never so cutting. Long ago, I remember 8-10 years ago, he was given youth meeting in Kolhapur. So he asked this question quite bluntly. He says, do all of you think that you will become happy if you marry the most beautiful woman in Kolhapur?
So now obviously nobody will say yes, because it's a sannyasi asking.
But the Maharaj said no. Because if you marry the most beautiful woman in Kolhapur, all the men of Kolhapur will become your enemies.
So what happens is that in this material world, when a person
gets sense enjoyment in whatever form it is, he gets competitors. When there are competitors, that increases the struggle for existence. There is that example of the Srimad Bhagavatam of the Kuru Rava bird. He had a piece of flesh in his mouth, and all the other birds were pecking. And I just gave up the flesh, and all the other birds went away with that, and he became peaceful. So like that, to the extent a person seeks sense gratification in this world, to the extent a person seeks material enjoyment, wealth, to that extent the struggle for existence increases. So, the wealthy person, because he already has wealth, if he goes on the path of greed and trying to increase it more and more, he will also be propelled in the struggle for existence. But if he is satisfied, he doesn't have so much struggle. And if a person is born in a cultured Brahminical family, a person gets habituated to living in simplicity. If a person has lived in simplicity, then a person doesn't have much problem of wanting more and more things. So that's how the struggle is minimized. And a person can focus on spirituality. So certainly, Shuchi and Srimata are not guarantees of continuing spiritual life. So actually, a person can be born in the Shuchi and Srimata family in two ways. One is by good karma. Second is by distraction of the path of bhakti, which is equivalent to good karma. So we don't see that all people who are born in intellectual or cultural families or are born in wealthy families become devotees. It doesn't happen. Because they need not have practiced spiritual life in their previous lives. They may have, they may not have. And if they have just come by punya to that wealthy stage now, then that wealth may infatuate them. Of course, even those who have practiced bhakti can also become infatuated. But Krishna described in later verses that there is a higher taste which pulls a person back, which pulls a person towards Krishna. So, that's why the Kunti Maharani says, Janma Ishwara Shuddha Shibhir. So, actually, there Janma and Janma and Aishwara. So, Shuchi and Srimat. So if one becomes intoxicated by these, then even they can be distractions. But for a spiritualist, there is a taste. A taste was what protects him. So we'll discuss this in our next class tomorrow. So, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki
jai.
Srimad Bhagavad ki
jai.
Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaura Premananda ki jai. Thank you very much.